The section I'm going to go over today is the one called The Function of the Teacher of God on page 19. This section covers basically how do you relate to people, how do you deal with people that think differently from what you believe, in terms of how do you practice the course with people who don't have that perspective or don't share that perspective, and how it describes what our function is in terms of those situations and in terms of those conditions. So to me, it's a very awesome, very powerful section. And as usual with the Course in Miracles, we know that we don't have to believe the ideas, we don't have to accept the ideas, we don't have to welcome the ideas, that we might resist some of it, but if we use it, it works. That's why I love not feeling any kind of a compulsion on my part to convert anybody or to get anybody to believe this, is because if they use it, it works. You know, and it's not for everybody. So that frees me up a lot too. I'm going to read through the section and then we're going to come back. Whenever the Course uses the term patient, it's talking about anyone who does not have peace of mind. The Course calls sickness non-right-mindedness. And so a patient is anyone in any particular situation that they're not experiencing peace of mind in. It says, if the patient must change his mind in order to be healed, what does the teacher of God do? Can the teacher of God change the patient's mind for them? Certainly not. But those already willing to change their mind, you have no function, I'll put it that way, you have no function except to rejoice with them, for they have become teachers of God with you, which is teachers of love. You have, however, a more specific function for those who do not understand what healing is. These patients don't realize they've chosen sickness or non-right-mindedness. On the contrary, these people believe that the sickness or the situation or circumstance has chosen them. Nor are they open-minded on this point. The body tells them what to do, and they obey. They have no idea how insane this concept is of having the body tell them what to do, and they obey. If the person even suspected how insane it is to think that the situation, the circumstance, or the body tells them what to do, he says they would be healed. Yet they suspect nothing. To them, the separation or the sickness is quite real. So the Course is talking about love and fear, first of all. So that first paragraph says, point number one, if we have to change our mind in order to be healed, because really our peace comes from within. So anybody that's not experiencing peace, no matter what they're going through, is something that they're telling themselves in their mind. We've seen people in very tragic situations and circumstances the way we would judge it, yet they can be surprisingly peaceful. Why? I've seen people in wheelchairs who were totally peaceful, more so than people who could walk. What made them more peaceful? Obviously the way that they look at things. So peace is really internal. It doesn't have anything to do ultimately with the external. So if another person has to change their mind in order to be healed, let's just pretend that Chuck he doesn't have peace. Not only that he doesn't have peace, he believes he's a victim. He believes that he's a victim of circumstances, that things happen to him, that he has no control over his peace. In other words, Chuck is an average person. Okay, because that's what the average person thinks. They think that they're up against situations and circumstances that they have no control over, and that people are always doing something to them, and they're nice people who are having crap happen, that they don't attract to them. You know, there's no realization that their thought and their consciousness creates their reality or draws their experiences to them at any level, the average person. So the Course says, well, if he's got to change his mind in order to be healed, what do I do? If I'm a teacher of love, if I'm going to be a demonstrator of truth, and this other person must change their mind. Now, can I change his mind for him? What does it say? Certainly not. So first of all, I got to get that I can't change his mind for him. Not only that, if Chuck all of a sudden, or if you're already willing to change your mind, let's say you're already on the path, you're already beginning to take responsibility, you're already beginning to see a connection between your thought and your reality, and you're studying and you're on your path and you're taking responsibility, well, the Course says, I don't have any function with you except to rejoice with you. So my function with somebody that wants to change their mind is just to be happy for them and to rejoice with them and be glad that I got somebody that's trying to move in the same direction that I'm moving in. Still, I don't change their mind. But he also says, because I'm happy because you decide to be a demonstrator of love and truth just like I have. I want to demonstrate the truth by assuming responsibility, realizing I'm a child of God, realizing I'm innocent, realizing I'm the creator of my own experience. And you're doing the same thing. So you're also a teacher of love. You're also a teacher of God. You're also a demonstrator of truth. So my job with you is to rejoice with you. So so he says, but Chuck, I got a more specific function. Because he doesn't understand what healing is. He doesn't know that healing is of the mind and not of the body. So he doesn't realize that he's choosing his state of mind. He doesn't realize that his peace comes from within. He doesn't realize that he's the creator of the way that he's perceiving and feeling things. So he believes that, as a matter of fact, he believes that the situations and circumstances that are happening to him just chose him. They just showed up in his life and he didn't have anything to do with it. And guess what? Chuck isn't even open-minded about that. So all of us know people who, if we try to tell them what we believe in terms of the power of the mind and consciousness and spirit, they'll say, you're crazy. I don't have nothing to do with that. It's the other person's fault. And I'm not even open-minded on that point. I know that I'm upset because of what my boyfriend did to me, and I don't want you to tell me that it's anything other than that. Look, things don't go right for me because I was born black in America, and so you just that's just going to mean that I'm at a disadvantage of me, that I don't want to hear anything about my problems are based on white people. You understand what I'm saying? There are people who think that way, both ways. Right? The reason why America's not working because we got too many immigrants. Is that, all you got to do is look at the news and all you see is projection. It's always somebody else's doing. It's always somebody else's fault. And when somebody else get their act together, then I'll be happy. Because guess what? I'm perfect. Everything about me is cool. It's just everybody else that's the problem. So, the court says that the person isn't open-minded on this point. It says the body tells them what to do and they obey. In other words, they believe that what they're going through, they have no effect. It cannot affect their body through their attitude and their spirit and their mind. They cannot affect their external situation because of their own attitude. So, the court then says a person like that doesn't have any idea how insane it is to believe that as a child of God, you have no power. That they don't know how insane it is to think that you would be in an experience that there's nothing about your thinking, nothing about the way that you feel or believe that has anything to do with the way you feel. Come on in, brother. So the court says, now this is a sentence in this paragraph to me that's a trip. The sentence says, if they even suspected that they would be healed. That he says, even if we just suspected that it was insane to believe we had no power, if we just even just suspected that it might be true that somehow or another we're the creators of our perception and our experience, he says we would be healed. He says, but the average person, what? They suspect nothing. To them, the separation between me and you is quite real. To them, the separation between my circumstance and me is quite real. The separation between me and what I perceive is quite real. Okay, so that's the first paragraph. Any questions about that paragraph or anything you want to share? Because Wednesdays, I'm very much open to discussion as long as we can keep it focused in on what we're talking about so that the energy stays high.
So, I'm thinking that what that's saying is that the person has the power to make the choice of correct perception. And in choosing correct perception, if they're choosing for peace, then they have to be willing to go through the uncomfortable period while they're transitioning from green to pink.
Exactly. And that's where most people bail.
Mm-hmm. That's where I
want to
bail.
That's where most people bail. I've been doing this for 30 years, and let me tell you, that's where most people bail. They bail in the transition period where they see what they've been doing to themselves. They bail during the transition period when they take responsibility for the way that they feel and they're trying to let go of blaming other people. Because, let's face it, it's easier. It's easier for me to sit back and say, if all of you changed, I'd be happy. It takes a lot less effort than for me to go, if I changed my mind, I'd be happy. So I don't blame people. I don't understand why the average person stays in victim consciousness, even though it keeps them in misery and in hell. Because they don't have to do anything. You know? And so, yes, you're absolutely right. Why you're changing from I am a victim to I am responsible everything in you that's based on I'm a victim is going to come up to try to make you see how you really are a victim so that you can say that that's crazy and then go back to the old way of looking at things and just keep everything the way it is without anything really changing. So that is the challenge. Yeah.
I seem to think that there's a fine line, though, and how you perceive that. It's taking responsibility for everything and not taking, and then not berating yourself. In other words, okay, I take full responsibility for my life.
Mm-hmm.
And so anything that's not right,
mm-hmm.
I need to, you know, not berate myself for that.
Absolutely, absolutely,
yeah,
absolutely.
So
well, that's the difference between blame and this difference between blame and taking responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell when you're blaming yourself because that's just an attack on yourself for making
right.
an error. So blame is nothing but attacking yourself for making an error.
Right.
Taking responsibility means you're recognizing your power and now you're ready to look at things another way and change things.
Mm-hmm.
One is an attack upon
mm-hmm.
yourself. One is empowering.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell which one you're using by the way you feel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're beating yourself up about a mistake that you made, then that's blame. If you are being compassionate with yourself and saying, that was an error and I don't want to do that anymore and I'm going to do it differently, now I'm taking responsibility. And
mm-hmm.
so you feel more empowered.
But see, but there's that real fine line between that.
Well, that's what I just defined.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. One is,
okay.
One is, do I beat myself up? And the other one is, do I see myself as having the power to change my perception? I admit that I made that mistake, and rather than focusing on the mistake, I'm going to focus on the solution, which is another way to look at it. The blame person just, because we've learned that punishment is correction. So therefore, if I beat myself up enough, then I've absolved myself of the error. So that's why people beat themselves up, because if we beat each other up and we punish each other, it would make perfect sense to demand that when you make a mistake, you ought to punish you too. You know, if you make a mistake and you get punished, and I want you to be punished for your mistakes, well, my mind is going to apply that same point of view to me, because the Course teaches whatever comes through you has an effect on you, and any attitude you take towards someone else, your mind automatically applies it to you. So whatever I want to happen to you is what my mind is going to automatically assume that's what I want to happen to me. So if I punish you and want to berate you, then my mind thinks that that's the way you handle things, so it wouldn't be any different, really, in terms of how it would relate to me. So therefore, I would berate myself also. But a conscious being knows, oh, that was a mistake, so what I need to do is apply the answer. I'm going, you know, it's a mistake to think I'm going to go to Unity Temple by going downtown. So I could beat myself up for going downtown, or I could recognize, oh, I'm going downtown, that's the wrong direction, and just come on over to Unity Temple. That's all the Course is saying. You know, yeah, you made a mistake if you thought you were a victim. Yeah, you made a mistake if you thought you were just a body. Yeah, you made a mistake if you think you're just separate. Yeah, you make a mistake if you think you're guilty and sinful. Yeah, you make a mistake if you lost sight of the fact that you're a spiritual being. Yes, you make a mistake if you lost sight of the fact that you are loved and that you are lovable and you deserve love. That's just a mistake. Yes, you form relationships that reinforce that idea. We all attracted to our witnesses to who we think we are. So, of course, we're going to attract somebody to us who reinforces whatever ideas we believe about ourselves. That's just a mistake. And so now I need to go through the period where you were saying, that period of transition, where I consciously go, oh, my God, I was ordering a ham sandwich. I changed my mind. I want a chicken sandwich. Right? And I ordered 5 ham sandwiches. Been used to eating ham, but now I want chicken. Okay, the people in the kitchen, they're going to bring me my old order. They're going to bring me the ham sandwiches. Now, am I going to be conscious enough to go, no, I've just changed my mind. I'm not doing ham anymore. And I might have to do that 5 times in a row before the chicken shows up. But most people won't do that. They don't realize, okay, you changed your mind. You're ready to love yourself. But you used to didn't love yourself, right? So you're sending a lot of crappy orders into the kitchen about you. And they're coming back in the life, it's coming back to you with the crap you ordered. Now you're gonna have to go, no, I'm not gonna enter in this kind of relationship again with this kind of person again. No, I'm not gonna enter into that attitude. You see, because the old person's gonna show up, your old pattern's gonna show up. The old kind of guy you used to be attracted to, the old kind of girl you used to be attracted to, all of them are gonna show up again because you put in 20 years worth of orders. So then it becomes, well, are you gonna say no when that person is misusing you, abusing you, mistreating you? Are you gonna still continue to invest in the ham when you know you want the chicken? You know, because it's not until you go, no ham, no ham, no ham, no ham, no ham, no ham, no ham. Chicken, great. Or if you're a vegetarian, sprouts, whatever your thing is. You know what I'm saying? But that's my point, is that in the transition, you're going to be constantly presented with your old mindset. And you have to consciously go, no. And the average person, it's just easier to surrender to the old pattern. So when the nice guy shows up, or the nice girl shows up, or the nice whatever, if I'm used to abusing myself and not loving myself, I'm not going to want to give them my attention. I'm going to still be attracted to the bad guy, or the bad girl, you know, because that's been my order. So, yeah, I'm going to be real attracted to her, but I still have to say, no ham. And then the person that I'm not as attracted to that is presenting me with what I say I want, then I have to consciously say, let's get together. Let's go, because I'm not attracted to you.
Unless you're just horny,
take responsibility. Be honest with yourself and say, this is just a physical attraction, and all I'm interested in is a physical attraction. But because of the way that we are programmed, the average person just doesn't want to admit that they just want to have a physical experience. They got to try to make it something more than that. So the person is going to try to make it into a love affair, or they're going to try to make it into a long-term relationship, because they think that it means that something's wrong with their morality if it's just physical. And that's how people trap themselves. Really, you know, they try to make it into something more than what it is so they can feel like they're morally sound, rather than just go, you know what? I want to jump your bones. You want to jump mine? Yeah, let's go for it. And we both innocent. You know. You know, but people won't do that. Y'all know I'm telling the truth. The average person won't do that. It's, you know, especially a challenge for it seems for the female to do that. It's almost got to be, if it's a woman, it's just got to be something. You know, because that's the way we're programmed. You know, it's got to mean something. And the Course says, no, it doesn't mean anything other than the meaning that you give it. That everything just means what you give it. Which is powerful. That's one of the reasons why I'm looking forward to doing this advanced mind training workshop that I'm going to do. It's going to be on June 16th. It's going to be from 10 to 3. So the financial investment is $50. And what it's going to be, I'm going to do them once a month, and you're not be committed to any of it. It's just that I want to form a group of people who want to go deeper, who want to spend more time, who really want to change their mind, who wants me to bring 30 years worth of all this stuff, and we can get down without me feeling like I'm watching the clock every 5 seconds. And really transform. That may not be a lot of people, but boy, whoever it is, we're going to have an incredible time. Now, I'm limiting the group to around 20 people in order to be able to really get down on a personal level. So if it's something that you want to do, I put it out there the last two classes about it, and I was amazed that almost 40 people said that they were interested. Mm-hmm. And so if there's something you want to do, it would be a great thing to go ahead and register for it and go ahead and make that commitment, because there are a lot of people that want to be a part of that. And that's great. I'm glad about that. Because I sometimes make myself feel frustrated because I don't feel like you're able to get the full benefit of what I have to offer in the time that we're together. I just don't. And because I want to be a heart and a mind and a spiritual transformation and a mental transformation. And you can't do that in an hour. It takes almost 50 minutes just to get your ego out of the way enough to hear. It's like to even hear what's being said. It really does. So by the time I stop, we're just at the point that some of us even can really hear what's about to be said. So I'm excited about that. So that's chapter 9. I think that's the third Saturday in June, maybe. And the second is the first. The ninth is So it'll be the third, June 16th.
Mm-hmm. 9 to 10 to 3.
I want to give people a chance that they can sleep a little bit in the morning and then finish in time enough to go out and play. So
it'll be the 10, one 6. On in June going to be the same as July, or
no? Each one of them are going to be different because I want to be free to go deeper and deeper and bring a lot of course and course related stuff. So then no two will ever be the same, but all of them will be just what the person needs. Who shows up, because I'm going to talk about relationships, spiritual awareness, letting go of anger, guilt, and grievance, about our spiritual nature. It's going to cover a lot of stuff, but we're just going to have more time to get deep and to get some actual tools to use to take into it. So again, if it's something you want to do, I got this sheet here that I'm starting today, signing people up who want to register for it. And okay, that was so much for the commercial. Before I go to the next paragraph, anybody else have a question about the first one?
I have a question about the difference between hen and chicken.
Okay.
I'll use an example from last week.
Okay.
Last week, I'm not very close to my family,
mm-hmm.
mostly geographically. They live on the East Coast, and I'm the only one who lives out here. I haven't talked to my dad's brother in 11 years since his funeral. Last week, my uncle called me, just out of nowhere, and just wanted to talk to me, wanted to see me, kept apologizing for not keeping in touch with me. You know, we don't have any conflicts between us. It's not like we're estranged. But all of a sudden, out of the blue, you know, he calls me and wants to see me. The next day, this was Thursday, the next day my brother calls and does the same thing.
Wow.
Just out of the blue. So I don't think that's ham, I think that's chicken.
Right.
And I mean,
yeah.
I took that as a very good sign.
Right, right.
Even though we're not close and we don't talk,
right.
and I'm okay with that,
right.
that suddenly...
Right.
You know, and I find it interesting, it's the males, because I have a very big family.
Right.
It's not like, you know,
right.
my mother, my sister, you know. So I just,
that's that. Well, that's something I look forward to about. See, I'll be able to deal more with the mystical, metaphysical sides of things. Because I'm looking for my mystics. I'm looking for the people who are willing to go beyond what the world teaches for a few hours and just kind of put it on the shelf. See, the course, we're all in constant telepathic communication with each other. There is just one mind. And that's what I've seen from the Course in Miracles over and over again. The minute I change my mind, I notice that the people around me seem to change, even without me saying anything to them. I've saw and had more relationship situations healed in my life since I got into the Course without processing and without talking to people than I ever did when I tried to deal with my communication skills and we're going to talk ego to ego and we're going to solve things. It's like the minute I got serious about having my own perception corrected, it was amazing to watch what started to happen with so-called people who I wasn't even connected with and how many people left my life, how many people came into my life, and how many people transformed. They didn't even know I was doing it. But I noticed that people just started to fade away, that I had got used to being around all the time. I noticed I wasn't hearing from them anymore. And usually they were people who were about a lot of drama. And then I noticed that people that in my life, relatives, I saw all of it transform to the point of the day I don't have a negative experience with anybody in my life. There's nobody in my life that I'm in any kind of conflict with at all. And I don't know many people that can say that. Nobody. Period. Zilch. Not family, and I got big family and relatives. Not friends. Not even strangers. Nobody. I just have to stir up some stuff every now and then just to get some stuff going. You know, and I'll see me do it. I'll see me do it. But I watched it. But in the beginning, it was a lot of ham. And then the chicken came.
But I don't think I would know that things were changing. This is me. Unless I started having these experiences where I know they're changing because I haven't talked to my Uncle Gordon in 11 years.
Yeah.
So he was calling, but
yeah.
not only is he calling, he just keeps saying, I'm sorry I didn't keep in touch with you all these years. I'm really sorry.
Yeah. Well, get ready for more of that.
Do you remember a couple weeks ago when I told you the trust thing? Strangers kept telling. Well, that just
yeah.
keeps happening.
Mm-hmm.
Just complete strangers. You know, I trust you.
Mm-hmm.
I trust you. So
mm-hmm.
that was something. In
uh-huh.
that.
Yeah. And they're cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Or even if you meet the insane people, you'll find that you react to them different than
yeah.
you used to. Even if you still not everybody is nice, you're finding that your reaction is not the same. Which is a big transformation.
You're talking about strangers coming up to you
mm-hmm.
all the time. Well, it's always kind of happened to me, actually. But lately, especially a lot of homeless people for some reason, but I just totally get engaged in conversation with them.
Well, this is the trip. The love is our natural state. The universe is about love and harmony and peace. It's on our side. It works with us. It just doesn't cooperate with our plan, and it doesn't cooperate with a plan that's based on guilt, fear, attack, and projection and blame. It doesn't cooperate with a plan that's only about your personal interests to the exclusion of everybody else's happiness. So that's why people work so hard, because they have to do it alone when it doesn't include anybody else. And let's face it, most people's plans are just about themselves or a very small nucleus group of people that they have special relationships with. And we also see the struggle that goes with that. You know, how many people do you honestly, can you honestly say, look out and want other people's happiness as much as they really want their own, for real? Most people are about their own personal interest. They're not about everybody's joy. The universe is about everybody's joy. It's not about your joy. It's about our joy. So anything I want for myself, I ask Spirit to want it for you. And rather than get into specifics, I just say, let peace extend from my mind to yours. I want you to have peace in the best form in your life, and I want peace in mine. Just include everybody else. You'd be amazed at the boost you'll get from the universe in terms of your desires. Even if you're not saying it with complete sincerity, just get into the habit of saying, you want everybody's peace. I want all of you to be abundant. I want all of you to be loved. I want all of you to be safe. Not just me. You know, I don't know about you all, but it used to be all about me. My plans was about me. You know, and if I thought about anybody else, it was still about me. I know y'all don't know anything about that, right? That's why everybody's so quiet. Nobody in here has ever just thought about themselves. I know, but really it happens. It really happens with some people. So the next paragraph goes, Chuck, you believe you're a victim. Okay, so he says, to them, God's teachers come to represent another choice that they've forgotten. So I'm Chuck's friend, so I come into his life to represent a choice that he's forgotten, which is the choice for peace, the choice to take responsibility. The simple presence of a teacher of God is a reminder. So the fact that I am being with him and taking responsibility and being loving is a reminder to him that there's another way he could be and another way he could see things. Now, my thoughts, check it out. He said, my thoughts, didn't say my words. He says his thoughts ask for the right to question what the patient has accepted is true. So that means while I'm with Chuck, I'm questioning what he's accepted is true. In other words, I'm not going into agreement with his attitude that he's weak, he's a victim, and that he doesn't deserve to have peace in whatever way he's experiencing a lack of peace. My thoughts are questioning. Then he says, as God's messenger, as the messenger of love, as the messenger of truth, we are the symbols of salvation. We are the symbols of peace. We are the symbols of healing. I'm giving you all the definitions of those terms. So by me coming to him and me not seeing things the way he's seeing it that's making him unhappy, then I have become a symbol of healing. He says, now, I ask the patient for forgiveness for God's Son in his own name. What does that mean? It just means that I stand for the alternative. Just by being with him, choosing for the truth, choosing for love, I'm letting him see an alternative. That's why the Course says in another part of the book that empathy, true empathy, does not mean to join in the suffering. That if you're really being empathetic with a person, you will represent the opposite of the painful thing that they're doing. You don't join them in the pain. You know, you're hurting, so I'm going to hurt with you. No, you're hurting, I'm going to remain peaceful, have compassion, but show you there's another way that it could be. If you in relationships, you know, I can represent the alternative male. You can represent the alternative female. We could all represent to each other the opposite of fear, the opposite of the world. So we should be standing for the alternative. And then he says, with God's word in my mind, I come in benediction, not to heal the sick. I'm just there with Chuck to remind him of the remedy God has already given him. I'm here to represent the truth that's already been given to all of us. I'm here to represent, he's sad and miserable. I'm here to represent happiness and joy and peace. I'm here to represent the choice that's available to him through a change of mind. Then it goes on to say, guess what? it's not my hands that's going to heal Chuck. It's not my voice that's going to speak the word of God to Chuck. I'm just going to give what I have been given. So when I share this with you, I didn't make this up. I'm just giving you what's been given to me, and then you're giving to the people that you know what's being given to you. So I'm not the originator of it, so therefore I don't have as much attachment to whether or not people agree or don't agree. I didn't create it. So I'm really here just to give him the peace that I've been given. I'm just here to give him the truth that I've been given. I'm just here to let him see the blessings that I've been given, to let him know that that alternative is available to him. And in my mind, I don't care what he says about being a victim, in my mind, I don't support it.
But you don't have to say it.
The best way, the easiest way to heal somebody is silently. You know why? Because then you don't have to bring up all of their defensiveness and their desire to be right about their position, which puts more energy into the very thing that you're trying to take the energy away from. Like if I tell Chuck, Chuck, you know, that person at work really didn't do nothing to you to make you unhappy. Well, yes, they did. And they did. And if you were really my friend, you'd be joining with me. You see what I'm saying? But if I in my mind thought, Chuck, you know, you're a powerful, unlimited being that creates your reality and you deserve happiness and you can make another choice, and I'm not joining you in that idea, because if I don't join you in that idea, I'm not strengthening that idea, then I'm doing him much more of a favor than if I told him he was wrong. If I told him, Chuck, you created that. That's not going to make him do anything but get mad. When people are mad and you tell them that they created their reality, they hate your guts. They do not feel compassion toward you. Just try it. I watch a lot of new students do that. It's like they go out and the first thing they do is tell everybody, well, you know, you're the one that's creating. And all their friends hate them. Don't even want to see them coming through the door. Because when you're in that painful, distorted state of mind, the last thing you want to hear is you created it. What you want to hear is that you deserve to be happy and you deserve to be healed and you deserve to have peace, and I want you to see resolution in this, and I want you to have, you know what I'm saying? You know, it's like, you know, it's like you what you do is you join with them in what you know their goal is. Rather than tell them they created it, I would say to Chuck, yeah, man, I know you really want to have peace in this situation. Can I join you with the idea of you just really having a lot of peace and all this being resolved? Now, unless he's totally crazy to the nth degree, but he's going to say what? Yeah, man, I really would like to get this solved. But if I said, Chuck, that came from your own internal unconscious guilt. You created that reality. He's going to say, are you out of your cotton-picking mind? And then he'll have to defend his position. So that's why God is quiet. That's why invisible masters are quiet. That's why angels, or whatever you want to call the invisible side of life, they're quiet, because all they would do is bring up our rebellious nature. And they would just be making it real. And they're not going to make it real. I'm not going to make Chuck's stuff real by focusing on his stuff. I'm going to focus on the truth about Chuck. And the Course says that's what our invisible teachers do. That's what higher power does with us. That's why Spirit doesn't grab you by the shoulder and say, you're wrong. Because it would just make you doubt your right mind. It would make you doubt yourself. It would just bring up anger and separation. Now, a person who wants to correct everybody because it gives them a feeling of superiority and specialness, they're not going to like this. Because they don't get a chance to get patted on the back, and they don't get a chance to be acknowledged as being the person who made such a difference in everybody's life, and you don't get a chance to get all the strokes that the ego needs in order to feel worthwhile if you're a silent healer. And the people that you are supposed to verbally talk to, you will know who those people are, because you will find that you would have already said what you needed to say before you even thought of it. And in most cases, you weren't even intending to help them, and they'll say what you said helped them. So most of the people that have been helped by us, we don't even know it. You know what I mean? I'm sure you've all had that experience of somebody telling you that you somehow helped them, and they didn't even, and you go, what did I do? You know, what did I say? You know, that's the kind of help that's the purest help. The court says, be very careful about, he called it consciousness-selected miractles. He said they're apt to be misguided. What does that mean? When I sit down and decide, I'm going to save you. You got a problem and I'm going to fix you. And that's what a lot of people do. They love to be caretakers. And it gives them up to them a specialist. So they go out and look for people to go take care of. And that's how they get their sense of self-esteem. It's not really about the other person. It's about making themselves feel like they're valuable. You know, and you know, I don't know if any of you have ever been caretakers, but again, that used to be one of my favorite pastimes. You know, it's amazing how much the people who you try to help from that perspective will sometimes be the main ones who end up resenting you. And then you feel like, wait a minute, I just tried to help you. Why are you upset with me? That's the problem. You tried to help me. You decided that I needed your help. And then you decided what kind of help I needed. And then, so you really imprisoned me. You didn't help me. Now you're mad at me because I didn't do what you advised me to do. So I really, you tried to make me your prisoner. Whew, it's deep. This book is deep. I mean, it says all that. It has a whole section that goes into that whole thing, you know. And then when I saw it, I went, you know, that's absolutely right. I do give people advice, and then I do get upset with them if they don't use my advice. Well, that wasn't a gift. That was an attack. That was an imprisonment. Now they got to do what I said do, else now I got a grievance with them. So I made a grievance. I didn't make a healing. So I try to remember, Earl, can you give it away and then let go of all your concern about whether or not the person uses it? If you can't, if you know you're going to be attached, just keep your mouth shut. And I try to stop a minute and do that. You know, if I'm going to be attached about whether or not you take my advice, can I not give it? Because if I am attached, it's an imprisonment. It's an attack. Because now I'm mad at you because you didn't do what I said. You know, and that has a lot to do with parent-child guilt and anger. You know, so much is around that. You know, the parent told the child didn't do it, now the parent's mad at the child because the child didn't listen to the parent, but then the child's looking at the parent. And the child's going, well, you know, you got exactly missed a piece of missed peace yourself. You know, so wouldn't it be better for you to demonstrate what you're trying to tell me? Well, no, we know what the parental rule, just do as I say, not as I do, you know what I'm saying? I want you to live up to standards I'm not living up to myself. It's deep, man. It's deep. I used to solve more trouble with my son when he was growing up by just simply asking him, how do you feel? How do you feel? You like the way you feel? Okay, would you like to not feel that way? Okay. Well, let me tell you. I always start out every conversation. I love you completely, 100%. There's nothing you can do to ever lose my love. That's not at stake. Now, let's see if we can get down to what can give you peace. You know, and it was amazing how that totally transformed our relationship with each other from a very young age to the point that all the way through being a teenager with both my children, I never went through most of the stuff that most parents go through. But then the course gave me a different approach, you know. And that's why I'm so convinced that it's true, because I've had such an opportunity to practice it in situations that I see other people say, well, you know, you need to get into the real world. Out there in the real world, you can't, you know, it's like, that's where it works the best, actually. I found was in the real world. In fact, matter of fact, it worked better in the world with people who weren't studying the truth than it did with people I knew who were studying the truth. Because then there's more of a who's right thing. You know, everybody's got their vision about what's right, but a person who's used to being a lot of times who's confused and unhappy and they're sad and they don't think anybody cares, they're much more glad to be around somebody who's not giving them a hard time, who is wanting to focus on their peace. They appreciate it more. They notice it more if it's coming from the heart.
Your son, how do you feel? Mm-hmm. Do you like how you feel? Mm-hmm. At peace?
Mm-hmm.
Then you would still end up advising him, though, would you?
Right, but he would. But at that point, he would be open to it.
So he had permission then.
Yeah, he would be more open to it because he had gone into agreement with me about what the goal was.
To be at peace. He wasn't at peace.
And he wasn't at peace, right. See, by going to his feelings, he would have to have been insane to say he felt good about me coming to see him at the principal's office. You know what I'm saying? At junior high school or whatever it was the last time I had to discipline him. And because the situation and the circumstance was one that he was in fear. And so you just do it. So what I would do is just make him be present. You know, it wasn't about beating him up. It was like, how do you feel? Not you're going to be punished in the future. How do you feel right now? Because the way you feel right now is your punishment. Because you certainly don't want to be here, and you certainly don't want your dad is showing up at the school. So how do you feel? You are loved, so that helped get rid of the guilt. You know, but at the same time, would you like another way to look at this? You know.
Why ask this? Is it? I teach seminars, business seminars, and so often in the class, people ask me for questions, ask me to solve things in their business world.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I ask a lot of questions before I will say anything because I don't want to. And I watch the rest of the class want to just instantly tell the person what to do. To advise them, but I might ask more questions about what's going on to see if we can uncover something. But I feel like it gets into a bit of a trap. It doesn't matter what you tell them anyway; they still want to be attached to how they've been doing it.
And once you recognize that, then that's when you go into, oh, I support you in having peace the way you feel like you need to have it, and let's go on. You know what I'm saying? That's why one of the guidelines that I have in workshops is that no fixing, no cross-talking, no everybody jumping on the... Because what happens is that people... The communication is the healing. A person feeling safe enough to communicate what's really going on in them is more of a healing than any of the advice that the people want to give them. That's what people don't understand. The communication is the healing. To feel safe enough to say how you feel in the moment is 99% of healing, because the Course says right behind the expression of the fear of conflict is the answer that's already in the person anyway. Mm-hmm. But what happens is that when people, the minute people say how they feel or what's going on, other people want to take their focus off their own stuff. And so then the person becomes the target of everybody telling them what they ought to do, what they ought to be applying to themselves.
Yeah.
So it's, and that scares the person, and then the person shuts down, and then nobody's been healed. And so that's why, you know, one of my number one rules is, you know, unless the person asks you specifically, you know, don't offer unsolicited advice. And it freaks people out. Because so much, again, we want to fix. You know, and their heart might be in the right place, but they don't understand that is, the healing is the safety. The healing is the communication, not the words. That's what the Course teaches. You know, it's not the words. It's not the words I say to you that matters. It's the fact that I'm present with you, and I'm listening to you, and I support your peace. That's what matters, not what I say to you. You know, and then I'm very open. That's why I'll ask a person, you know, would you like to have another way to look at it? And then if they go, yes, but three times, I have a three-time rule. Mm-hmm. So if a person yes buts me three times, then I know they're not asking an honest question. An honest question, the Course teaches, is a question where the person has no idea what the answer is, so therefore they're totally open to what you have to say. You know, like a kid going, what is this? And he has no idea. And you say, well, this is a tape recording. They say, okay. Why? Because they didn't know. But adults don't do that. Adults usually want to make statements in the form of a question. So they always ask a question with an answer already in their mind. And then when you answer them, then it gives them a chance to say what they wanted to say rather than just say, I want to make a statement. You know, that happens a lot in classes. People ask you a question, and then as soon as you answer it, they'll say, but I thought... Dot, dot, dot. Well, then you really didn't have an honest question. You really wanted reinforcement for what you already believed, and you just wanted to state what you already believed, which wasn't a question. You know, so the minute I hear that, I go, oh, okay, you think you know. So there's nothing for me to say, but I hope the answer works for you, and I bless you in going in the direction you need to go, and let's move on. See, because I know from the Course that you never try to change another person's mind for them. That you only join with a person who shares your purpose. So if you want to go in that direction with me, let's go. If you want to go another way, then I'm going to bless you on that way, which is different from just, you know, I'm mad at you because you didn't go my way. I'm just saying I wish you peace on your way because I'm here to represent the alternative.
I love this to say, would you like another way of looking at that?
Yeah, well, yeah, would you like another way of looking at that? That doesn't mean you have to accept it. That doesn't mean you have to agree with it. Mm-hmm. It just means, you know, it's like last time, it's like my son is a fundamentalist, born-again Christian, Republican, black guy. who looks just like me. So it's like looking at myself, at like the alter bizarro world opposite. You know? You know, it's like we couldn't be more different in our way of looking at things, but we love each other. And that's what that's why I know love is more important than anything. Because we love each other, then no matter how different we are in our perceptions, then we always want to look at it in such a way that we still have peace with each other. Because our peace with each other is more important than being right. And then, you know, he's 32. So that's nothing for me to say anyway in terms of what he believes or what he should do. And I didn't create him. To begin with, God did. So that's how I made parenting easy for me. I got real clear early in the game who created my children. And I decided it wasn't me. I might be the way their body came here so that their soul could enter into it and do its thing. But I did not create my children. And as far as I'm concerned, my children came here with their own spiritual lessons, their own karma, their own everything. And if I could be, through being me, being authentically myself, be of help to them and love them, then that was my role as a parent. You know, then I had a certain responsibility for a certain number of years to take care of certain things. I understood that. But because I was into the course when they were very young, I can't tell you how much more easy my parenting and parental experience has been compared to so many of my associates and friends and relatives. You know, I know the course works. That gives me such a feeling of peace. Mm-hmm. You know, I know the course works. So I don't have to prove it to anybody. You know, it's when I see somebody trying to prove something to me, I know they don't believe it. Mm-hmm. And so I know they're trying to convince themselves. And so that's when people are new to stuff, that's when they recruit. And that's a good thing. I mean, I'm glad that people get excited about the class and want to bring other people to the class. But it's important for them to realize that they're trying to convince themselves. And that's what you do at the beginning. You want to convince yourself. So anyway, so how my children turned out was not my responsibility. That was my attitude. You know, because they existed before they got here just like I did. So for some reason they wanted me for their father. And obviously they knew I was going to be opposite to them. And I knew they were going to be opposite to me because I don't believe anything is an accident. I don't believe your sex is an accident. I don't believe your race is an accident. I don't believe the social economic conditions you're born into is an accident. I don't believe your siblings are an accident. And I don't believe your parents are an accident. I believe all those things are chosen because of the lessons you're going to learn through those people. Some of those people seem like they teach you through painful lessons. But that was a choice. Now that's a level of responsibility that most people aren't able to even get anywhere near. But you'd be amazed at the difference it'll make with your relationship with your friends and relatives, though. You know, I mean, it's a lot easier to forgive somebody that you believe was part of a spiritual lesson that you chose than to think that you're just a victim of somebody who just mistreated you because you were a victim of them. It's amazing what happened in terms of the situation harmonizing itself. So I got turned on by the results. I got to the point that I didn't even care anymore. It was like I would see the result and I would go, you know what? That might sound crazy, but I noticed when I started to look at it that way, my relationship started to heal. So for me, that's all I needed to know. I didn't need to go, well, that sounds crazy. Okay, that's all right. You don't have to do it. But for me, there are no accidents. Yeah.
Okay, a week and a half ago, my one remaining brother had a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't know, so he didn't go in for 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
So he's in there. And mm-hmm. Last night, he put in a permanent pacemaker. Mm-hmm. After driving from home into Denver and all that. And three of his adult sons were in the waiting room with me yesterday, and one of them still hammering at the sauce and the blues and stuff. And my brother was doing that last 7 years. So driving in today, he looked bad last night. And when he came out of this, because he's going to be 75. So before I went in, I had that one CD of you where you were saying, I ask Holy Spirit to enter this relationship and bless it for me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Mm-hmm. So I just sat there with that. Then I went in, not knowing what to say. He's in a chair and his daughter's giving him a foot massage. And I looked at him, and I did some Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
And then what came out was, you know, you're as tough a guy as our older brothers told me you were.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when you won the big conference championship in college, one of them said you look like a brown Superman.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you can handle it. That's
mm-hmm.
what came out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
None of this, you look like crap yesterday, are you okay mm-hmm. on that? What mm-hmm. came out was, mm-hmm. you're a stud.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he lit up.
Mm-hmm.
He lit up. And this nurse that was there, she lit up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's what came out because I took the time ahead of time.
There you go.
I had this lecture on boozing and I went in and I saw mm-hmm. him as the champ he is.
Mm-hmm.
And it was mm-hmm. the best visit we've had during this rough week and a half, man.
It's like what does the course say? If you use the ideas, you recognize that the ideas will show you that they're true.
But you know how hard it is for a professor not to tell you what to do?
You know, I know. It's like I was Dr. Corrector of the universe. That's what I call them, doctor. I call them Dr. Correctors. Because I've literally had to stop people and just go, you know what? If you keep on correcting me every time I say something, I'm going to stop talking to you. And they'd be like, what? You know, I said, I don't need you to tell me I'm wrong, because that's what you're saying. When you're correcting me constantly, you're saying I'm wrong. I know how I want to express myself. I don't need to use the words you would use. Like a lot of times in New Thought, people are constantly correcting each other about what they say. Well, you shouldn't say such and such and such, and cancel, and that's too negative, and da 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 da. If you say that, it's going to manifest, and da da da. So sometimes the hardest people to talk to are the people on the path. That's what I meant when I said they're the hardest because they feel like they're trying to convince themselves of this new thought system. So therefore, their temptation is to constantly correct every single person that talks to them. And they don't realize that it's a form of separation. People are going to get away from you, and then you wonder, what happened to all my friends? And it's like they got tired of you trying to fix them with your new knowledge. Dr. Corrector. You know, it's a trip. So that's beautiful. That's beautiful to hear that story. And then you prayed first. You know, you did the right thing. You were the alternative. You didn't share the vision that other people had of him. Everything we just said today was what you did. And that's the most you can do. And then you have to accept, I'm going to close on this, you have to accept that some souls, regardless of how much you pray or how much you want it to be different, those souls have chosen that lesson. And they're going to give themselves that lesson anyway, whether it's time for them to leave the body, or whether they keep that disease for several more years. And so don't think that because you did not see a physical shift that it doesn't mean you weren't practicing the truth. Because that's the other temptation. Sure. To think that a healing hasn't occurred unless it looks a certain way. You know. But if a soul has actually chosen a certain lesson for themselves, then, you know, they're going to do that. Regardless of how you feel about it, they're going to have that, you know. No matter how much I prayed that my brother recovered from his illness, he passed on to the next plane. You know? And I'm still in communication with him because I learned through the course that the body dying is not the person dying. So I love that about the course. I stopped killing the people I loved by thinking that they were gone because their bodies weren't here. So that's good to know. That's good to know. So the people you love, they still exist, whether you see them in the body or not. So I'm going to stop here, and we're going to do the love offering. But that's what the Course is saying. People who get to this level of spiritual development are beings that are trying to decide, do they want to go through another dream or do they want to wake up to who they really are as spiritual beings, as children of God? Which is an entirely different experience that has none of the pain that we go through and none of the fear that we go through. Some souls choose to what? Have another dream. They just keep having other dreams. And then the Course says, okay, this is what I want you to do. I want you to go from fearful dreams to happy dreams. So since you are still deciding to have this dream of separation and this dream of being a human and this dream of specialness and this dream of relationship, why not have one that is full of joy and full of peace? And then from that joyful, peaceful life, physical life, then you wake up to who you really are that's even greater than you can ever imagine. So it says we don't go from pain and fear and conflict to awakening. We go from pain, fear, and conflict to a perception of life that is not full of pain and conflict to waking up to who we really are. So to me, that's like being told you go from being an unhappy person to a happy person to an awake being.
Earl.
Then there's no sacrifice, because that's why a lot of people get turned off by this stuff, because they think somehow or other is denying them their physical pleasures. And the Course is saying, no, I'm just trying to get rid of your fear, your guilt, your attack, and your pain. I'm not trying to get rid of your physical existence. I'm just trying to get rid of the crap that you give yourself, Earl. You know, you still be here, but you just won't be full of crap. You know, which is great. Which is great. Yeah. Yeah.